Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Gregory McLaughlin. He's a New Jersey-based singer-songwriter who recently issued his debut album, actually in late 2025. Musically diverse and filled with a range of experiences and emotions, the songs on the album demonstrate McLaughlin's unique perspectives and sensibilities, laying the groundwork for a promising and rewarding recording career. We spoke about his initial interest in music, writing about his adopted home state of New Jersey, and why bridges in songs are so important. That's Gregory McLaughlin on Into Music, coming up now. So what was your introduction to the idea of songwriting? Was this something that, like, you know, as a kid or something, you were kind of enamored of music and it was like, oh, yeah, this seems interesting?
Well, I mean, I was obsessed with songs, period, you know, out of the gate since I got my first cassette, Michael Jackson Thriller. But I think as far as songwriting itself is concerned and wanting to be a songwriter, that didn't really click until I had life experiences. And I always had a little bit of an inkling to make up melodies in my head when I was young. But I think once I actually started going through the ups and downs of life, it became an outlet for me to find a way to express myself through, you know, the various things that you're going through.
Yeah, I think song is like, I don't know about you, but for me, from a very young age, and I think this is true of a lot of kids, it's a lot of kids make up songs, right? Like, and that's a really wonderful place when we're in that moment.
Yeah, I mean, people have always told me I was a very random person, just about as far as conversation is concerned. And, you know, just being everyone talking about one thing and me suddenly talking about something else. I kind of feel like my brain is like a Rolodex that keeps on spinning. And I think that gives me a lot of ideas just because it's always churning. I can't seem to ever turn it off up there. So that would be a big part of probably why my output is just a lot of volume.
Well, I think that's another thing too in creativity, right? Is that we have that thing where it's like sometimes what somebody said is less interesting than what we thought they said, or it creates a kind of association, you know? And so we spin off of that.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think about that constantly. No matter where I am, one thing reminds me of another thing and kind of pulls a lot of these threads together.
So it's interesting that to kind of tap into that for songwriting. Now you, at some point in your life, I understand, took a course in songwriting. And so what did that kind of open up that, for instance, playing music prior to that hadn't?
Yeah. I mean, I think taking a songwriting class, and it was Pat Pattison at Berkeley, it kind of just took all the disparate parts of what was going on and gave it a glue to hold it together, you know, gave me certain concepts. And I don't always follow the same formulas as far as verse, chorus, bridge, verse, chorus, not at all. I mean, there really are no bounds as to what you can do. But I think the concepts that the songwriting class gave me really just did something that clicked, that made it all easier, no matter what approach I was taking with my craft.
Because there's like there's that difference between like the raw creativity, and then somehow we have to like harness it, but don't put such a tight harness on it that it's not interesting.
Yeah, and you know, I would say that as far as when I have pop culture references in my music, you know, that's part of me not having a tight harness on it. You know, things that might be dated someday, that's part of not having a tight harness on it. Like, you know, something about that song Kodachrome by Simon and Garfunkel. You know, people don't know what a Kodachrome is nowadays. And some people might say, oh, that's dated. But in my opinion, it's timeless. So I have a Curb Your Enthusiasm reference in one of my songs. And people might not get that maybe in 20 years. Maybe they will. Maybe a small number of people will appreciate it, and most people probably just won't even notice it. But that's all part of me not really having a bound on it. You really can do anything.
Well, and I mean, if you're going to be genuine, I guess, in a song, you're living in a world where, or Paul Simon was living in a world where people knew what a Kodachrome was. I'm thinking of Jim Croce, right? That song Operator. Somebody born today when they're 20 years old won't understand the concept of a payphone, right? But that's the world that Croce was living in. And if you listen to the song, you can still get the basics of it, I think, no matter what.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, a great song's timeless.
Yeah, so it's just that I think maybe the middle ground, I don't know how you feel about this, but I think maybe the middle ground, like we were talking about with that harnessing, is that you ultimately just have to be yourself.
100%. Unapologetically, you have to be yourself. And I think I'm very much myself. I think I'm very much myself. And I think that's why I have such a nice connection with my followers.
So this album, that's what kind of struck me, was that you're taking kind of, I don't know, there's a lot of kind of like everyday sort of stuff, right, that would seem like a jumping off point for these songs, and that this kind of like maybe ordinary situation or maybe a mundane moment or something can be transformed into like a deeper conversation about it.
You have any songs specifically that you're thinking of?
Yeah, I think as a whole, that's kind of what struck me, was that it was like, oh, well, this isn't like, it doesn't have to, be like the standard trope of like, lovers in a fight or lovers falling out of love or any of that other stuff. It can just be like the observations about whatever's going on.
I mean, I think that the way I arranged the songs, I tried to kind of have a flow from whimsical to deeper to more whimsical to deeper, and then, kind of a big release at the end. So I don't know where that falls into what you're hearing, but that's a lot of the way that I was seeing the flow of the songs.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's it, right? It's that thing of like discovery. You kind of toy around with it for a while, and then you think about, well, there's larger ramifications for whatever this is, but we still need to laugh.
I mean, I try to not be take myself too seriously, too seriously.
So that's hard to convey, I think, in music sometimes, is like humor, because the on one hand, people can think of it and they go, oh, well, that's it's humorous, so therefore it's not serious. Or sometimes somebody's humor is so idiosyncratic. So was that something that you kind of honed, for instance, through live performance, that you can kind of figure out, like, okay, people are responding to this in a certain way?
I would say so. I mean, I play at open mics, two or three times a week, and I'm always connecting with people and trying to kind of gauge how they respond to the different songs. The limitation of that is usually it's only a few songs each time. So I don't do a lot of, I'm starting to do more long shows where I really get to connect with people on longer levels, but a lot of times it's not to listening rooms, a lot of times it's to bars. So it's really hard to gauge exactly how people are responding to so much of it. But I mean, I pay attention to the comments on my live streams very much so. And, people's feedback there definitely has an influence on my decisions in, I don't know, what songs I play more often, what songs I might choose for a record, what song, it's a nice instant feedback to see how your material is resonating with people.
Because this is something that comes up a lot in the conversations I have, is that we often don't know what's going to connect with people. You could be trying out a song at an open mic saying, I'm going to give this a shot, but I don't know about it, and people embrace it. Or you could come to an open mic and say, man, I think I have the best song I've ever written, and people could be getting up for lattes in the middle of it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true. I do always try to go all out every single time. So it's very minimal that that would happen, but it does sometimes. Sometimes when you take a chance, it does, but sometimes when you take a really big chance, it doesn't at all. So it's every you're always rolling the dice. If you're gonna be growing, you gotta roll the dice all the time.
Because that's like, that's what it's about, because you have to be, I think, present, ready to kind of, for lack of a better term, like pounce on something. Something presents itself to you that you haven't seen before and you go, okay, I better follow that.
Yep, that makes sense. I agree.
So what's kind of like your barometer for whether something gets off the ground? Because presumably you've probably got things where, I don't know, you had a riff or you got to a first verse or something and then you were like, I just don't think that this is viable, at least not now.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the barometer for that is, do I forget the words? If I forget the words, it's not working. If the words just come to me and I don't forget them, I know it's like, bam, it's right. You know, I mean, I have songs that'll linger for years and I'll even play them on my live stream or even possibly play them live, but I'll be finding myself forgetting certain words to certain verses. And then something magical will click and I'll say, wait, why was I thinking that should be that whole time? And the next line will come along and it'll be like, boom, it's there. And that's really the barometer. You know, when my memory is just, you know, thank God I have a good memory. Let's hope I always do. But that's really it. When I can't remember the words, it's not right. And once those words are just flowing right out of me, it's usually like, boom, yeah, this is definitely dead on.
That's interesting, because that's like, I mean, I guess for a song, that's what's going to lead people. I mean, yeah, a melody is important, but a lot of times we connect with whatever's being sung. So that, I guess, makes sense in a way. It's like, oh, the words, if you forget the words, then it's not really a song on some level.
Yeah, when you forget the words, there's just something wrong. There's something that does not line up properly. I mean, for me, you know, everything really has to work. Everything has to work or I'm not satisfied. And there are so many great lines that could be a great line in another song that just are not right for, you know, for a specific song. And sometimes you hate to throw it out, but when you know it's not right, you just have to figure out the best approach or best move to keep on going with it.
I wanted to talk about the song Life in Jersey because I love songs about place, you know, no matter where it is. And I love it, especially if I feel like I've been to a place when I haven't after I listen to a song. Yeah. So how did that tune, what was kind of the inspiration for it and how did you kind of put it together?
You know, I've lived in Jersey for 20 years now, which is less than half of my life. And when I realized I lived in Jersey for 20 years, I just got the idea. And honestly, I don't remember how it came along. It was just a hook that was in my head like any other. And people absolutely love that song here. And I'm always getting, people are always yelling for it, life in Jersey. And I don't always satisfy their request when I have a limited set. So it's only really fun to play when I really know that the audience is kind of like, you know, singing along and jamming with it. So yeah, I mean, it was kind of a celebration of me living in Jersey for 20 years and deciding to call Jersey home, because I was originally from New York. And for a very long time, I would still tell people I'm from New York. But after 20 something years, I just consider myself from Jersey now. I love New Jersey and it is my home now. So that was kind of my statement of, okay, I'm from Jersey now.
But it is funny too, right? Like when you cross that threshold, like I'm not native to Kansas, but it's like, I've been here long enough that sometimes people will talk to me and they're like, yeah, where do you go to school? And I don't do this, but there's like half of me that just wants to say like, yeah, I went to North High, you know, like... Because
sure.
It feels like I've never been anywhere else, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and, you know, Jersey kind of gets made fun of a lot for one reason or another. It just does. So, you know, I kind of poke fun at that a little bit in the song also, in the bridge, you know, where all the rules, you can throw all the rules out the window in the bridge. So that's a decent example of that. It's actually one of my favorite bridges I've written. So
here's the question for people who maybe don't know songwriting or maybe starting out. What in the world is a bridge and how does it work?
Well, bridges that a lot of people will just say, boy, I really like that part of that song. You know, it's usually after the chorus, before the third verse. That's kind of the standard spot for it to be. But it's something that breaks up the repetition and makes you want to finish the song. So it's not just the same thing over and over. And I have lots of songs that don't have bridges. I mean, it's really not a rule that you have to have a bridge, because sometimes it doesn't feel right. Sometimes you do not need it. Superficial Lines has no bridge, for example. But it's basically really it is a definition of itself. It's a bridge. It's a bridge from the beginning to the end, and it breaks up the repetition. I'll name a few other examples of great ones, phenomenal ones as far as complex bridges are concerned. Let It Go from the movie Frozen. I mean, that bridge is unbelievable. It completely changes the song. And if you were alive 10 years ago with young children, that's around the age my kids were young, and you witnessed an entire, group of kids at some sort of school event where they played it, and all the kids know every single word to that bridge section, it's impressive. It's impressive. So it's just a great part of a song. I mean, you look at Rosalita by Bruce Springsteen. The bridge is a complete change. It breaks everything down. And he goes into the whole thing about, your mama don't like me, your dad doesn't like me, and I got the record deal and all that stuff. And it's fascinating and it's fun. And then they got the big buildup in that song. You got like that bridge is like a classical suite. But yeah, it just gets you from one part to the next. It's the bridge. And it's always been a fascination of mine. And I will say one thing about writing bridges is I never really have to think hard about them. It's a part of the songwriting that always just comes naturally to me. I don't sweat it. If I don't feel like it needs a bridge, I just don't do one. And when it needs it, it just seems to come all the time. I feel blessed. Maybe it's my obsession with bridges or something, but I never work hard at writing a bridge. But I think I've got some good ones.
I wanted to ask you about your bass playing. I love bass, and I love what you do with bass. What was it about bass that was so attractive to you?
Oh man, it was a blessing that when I was 16 years old, a friend of mine said to me, "Hey, you should play bass guitar. It's only got four strings. It's really easy." And I didn't even know what it was. So that is how I started playing bass. I had a friend who played guitar, and he said, "It's four strings. It's easy. Why don't you get one?" And we like played Wild Thing in his backyard. And honestly, I didn't even know what bass was at that time. And a lot of people don't know what bass is. People, just normal people who love music say to me, "What is the bass again? What does that instrument do?" And that was me when I was young, because it's something you just feel. It's something you feel. And as far as being a bass player is concerned, I mean, it's the greatest thing in the world because you get to be that Wizard of Oz in the control booth who is not getting all the hype and all the excitement, but you are really the one who's steering that ship. And it's just such a great instrument. It's nice being the glue between the drums and the guitar and the keyboards and everything else. I don't know. I just love it. I'm so happy that I made that my friend told me it was an easy four-string instrument and I started doing it.
You've been listening to a conversation with Gregory McLaughlin. His self-titled debut album is out now. You can learn more about him, including his live stream performances, at gregorymclaughlin.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. We welcome your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. And as always, like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.